everyone. I'm Dominique Johnson-Lindsay, and welcome to the Active Listener Podcast by Lightspeed. For the past 3 decades, Lightspeed has journeyed with educators and tech experts across school districts. With our Active Listener Podcast, we are bringing the stories and experiences of our customers, education experts, and our own team members on how listening is foundational to education. Tune in as we amplify these vital voices and understand more about the people shaping the future of education. We hope every podcast listen will be a learning opportunity with Active Listener. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Active Listener Podcast. So today I have two really special people joining me. I have CEO and founder of Gaggle, Jeff Patterson, and I have Lightspeed CEO, David Solomon. So before we begin and jump into all my questions, I want both of you to introduce yourselves. So Jeff?
Sure, glad to. Thanks for having me on. So I'm the founder and CEO of Gaggle. I'm also known as that crazy Gaggle guy. I started the company 25 years ago. I was young and naive, and I'm grateful for the things I didn't know because that kept me from making mistakes that I would have made.
And now David?
David Solomon, CEO with Lightspeed. Been with Lightspeed for 18 years and have done all kinds of different things in this company, from sales to marketing to product management and development. And it's just a big part of my life. Yeah, I love it. And it's really great to be here with Jeff. You know, for many of us in the ed tech space, he's a role model, not just in how he's built Gaggle, but all the things he does around to support the ed tech space and everybody in it.
I agree. I actually found Jeff on my own coming into Lightspeed because he posts these like long job listings. And so once I got in this space and I was telling him, like, oh my God, I love ed tech. I followed you and I start sharing your posts. So I love that.
Thank you. I'm glad to be able to help so many people with those job posts. I got to ask David a question. So you just said you've been in all these jobs from marketing to sales to product. Am I understanding correctly? You failed at all those jobs until they gave you CEO. Is that what happened?
Last man standing.
That's awesome. So of course, I wanted to have you both here today to talk about something that I feel like was very unique. And coming into Lightspeed, it was something that really caught my attention. And that is being a purpose-driven company. And so a lot of company, every company has a mission, they have a vision, they have all of these things. But it's very different to be purpose-driven and to participate with Tugboat Institute and being an evergreen company. So I thought that was so unique. And so just kicking it off, I wanted to kind of ask you both, what made you want to kind of formalize the process and be a evergreen company?
David, you want to go first or shall I?
You go ahead.
So I did not set off to build a purpose-driven company, right? I was a young kid when I started Gaggle, but I'm realizing now it's just who I am. My company is an expression of who I am and the values that I hold. And I'll sometimes tell people, I don't know if Gaggle is truly an evergreen company, but I'm an evergreen person, right? And so when I found Tugboat, it was like, wow, there's all these people that think similarly to how I do, that it's not about the exit. It's about the journey. It's about making a difference in the world. It's not about trying to impress other people because I raised this much money or I exited with this much. That's not a way to live your life in my mind.
Yeah, when I came to Lightspeed, I mean, I was well into my career, and I was really taken with what the founder Jerry Ramey cared about, which was, you mentioned just cause. You know, he had a just cause for the whole company, and it had a lot to do with, you know, the market and providing products and services that really make a difference. But it also had something to do with the how we did that. And the how was what I think I really fell in love with. And that how was something that involved all the people in the company. So I think, you know, what I really appreciated about it was that this was a place where people cared about each other, had a lot of respect for each other. And I think one of the things that really amazed me is that there was built-in trust. Like, everybody started with trust. And I really hadn't worked in too many environments like that. I hadn't worked in environments where it was competitive, where people had agendas, where the long-term view really didn't exist. It was more like, well, how do we get to the next quarter? How do we hit a number? Not how do we build a great company that will endure and last for a long time so that the people who work here can benefit from that and can give the customers better service, better quality products because they're here for the long term. You know, that really impressed me. And that's why I got started here. And I, you know, I've just grown stronger with that feeling. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, Jeff, Tugboat was a place you're like, oh, you know, I'm not the only one. There are other people that want to build companies that will last a long time and aren't being built just to be sold and generate a profit. And, you know, profit fuels the business. Profit fuels the future. Profit fuels imagination and other things you can do. Profit takes care of the 85 families at Lightspeed. That's what profit's for. And, you know, we like the Simon Sinek book, The Infinite Game, and how, you know, you don't play to win. You play to keep playing. That's fun. And I have bought into that vision.
So something that you brought up that I think is very unique, both of you, is the difference between saying you are the person that is evergreen versus you came into a company that was evergreen. So knowing that, I think a bigger picture is that the purpose and values has to trickle down to like every branch across the business in order to make it work, in order for it to be a true like evergreen company. So from both of you all's perspective, how do you ensure that, you know, this purpose is woven into everything that we do and all the decisions that we make?
Yeah, so I know at Gaggle, we have a set of core values, right? We've got about 7 core values that define how we operate as a company. Those evolve and change over time. In fact, I think they're due for an update now. And we reinforce those. And I'll give you just a couple of them. Innovation over perfection. I really want us to be an innovative company. We have another one, provide great customer service even when it doesn't make financial sense. And the point of that is to empower my people to do what's right for the customers over the long haul. So those are two ways, or those core values are one of the key ways we do it. We try to spend a lot of time together and build memories together. We have traditions of things that we do that I think sort of build that camaraderie. And really, I see my role is to preserve the culture as we get bigger. And that means it still has to evolve. The culture has to evolve. And I'll tell you about a challenge we're having right now with our culture. We're about 170 employees now. And in the past, we kind of referred to Gaggle as a family. And we were like a family, really cared and looked out for each other. And we still like those aspects of our culture, but we've realized we need to evolve to be a high-performance sports team. And as members of a team, we care deeply about each other, but winning is important. We all have to carry our weight and do our job. And I just shared on a staff meeting that many of our departments need to see their role as not their job, but serving the rest of the company. Some of our departments are like blockers on a football team. They need to clear the way so the running backs can get into the end zone. And those running backs are our success managers, our salespeople, our safety team. And so that's kind of where I'm focused.
Yeah, I think, Jeff, you know, just like you, the core values really set the foundation, right? And, you know, for us, it starts with integrity and, you know, respect. Innovation is a core value for us. Stewardship and humility. And the innovation is one that I think for a companies like ours, you have to be extra good at it because Let's say we had a big idea. We go out for funding, right? That would be a normal track. You go, okay, we have this idea. We're going to go get funding. You pitch it and you may get investment that you can spend on your innovation. At Lightspeed, you know, we don't do that, right? We don't look for investors. We don't look for outside funding that would take ownership away from the employees. You know, we're 100% employee owned. So when we talk about, let's say, like product innovation, we have to be very practical about it. And we have to think about it over the long term. And I think that we have to find ways to do things with less to accomplish the same level of goals that someone who gets a big infusion of cash might have. And while we may want that infusion in cash and could put that to good use, the trade-off doesn't work for us. So, okay, how do we get more practical in our innovation so we can accomplish things, get products to market faster, evolve them faster? And that just requires, you know, like your sports analogy, a lot of teamwork, a lot of collaboration across the groups, and a lot of people to buy in what you're trying to do. And I think in reinforcing that, Dominique, you know, it's little things, you know, like the weekly huddle, right? That's one thing that brings us all together to talk about what's going on in the company. Be very transparent, like as best you can, everybody in the company knows exactly where you stand every week. Make sure that the annual, quarterly, 3-year, 5-year objectives are really clear to people and how they fit into that. You know, I don't think it's anything fancy, right? I think it's just doing the right thing by people in the company, and others follow that lead. They do it the same way.
I love that you talked about that, David. That's one of my favorite parts of Lightspeed. And I think, you know, the transparency of it all was so like refreshing to me, but also new. It's just like, I have never worked anywhere where someone would do something like that. And it kind of brings a good point. And that is in knowing that, you know, how both of you have described it is, you have to be the leaders of the ship and make it move forward. And we have these values in mind, but there's also like these underlying things that are happening. And I think transparency is one of them. So how do you balance the need to be transparent with the need to keep everybody motivated and moving forward?
Oh, this is hard. We just did our, we have an employee survey we do twice a year called Energage. And one of the things that we didn't score very well on was our people said they didn't feel informed about important decisions, right? I take that on me. This is something we're going to work on improving. And some of the ways we do that is, you know, we have these staff meetings about every 6 weeks, right? And I need to make sure that I'm doing those on a regular schedule. I try to post things to Slack and keep people communicated that way. But I realize it's not just me and my leadership team anymore. As we've gotten bigger, I need to make sure that my second level leaders are also really focused on communicating, keeping people informed. There's a balance, because when we tell people what's happening too early, they start having 1,000 questions and they get really nervous about it. It's not well thought, it's not worked out. But oftentimes we're working this out as we go, and I need some patience. So it's a challenge. There's a balance. How do I keep them informed without getting them too much to worry about?
I think that one of the advantages of being 100% employee owned is that, you know, you can talk about people. It's like, hey, you're an owner now. So you need to know that sometimes things aren't good. Sometimes things are fuzzy. Sometimes we are at risk. And all the more important for you to know and not panic and help us work through it. And, you know, we've had a number of examples of that over the years. And I see it as like the Matrix. You know, do you want the blue pill or the red pill, right? You know, you take one pill and everything's fine until it's not, and then you're laid off, right? Or you take the blue pill and you see all the problems, you see all the challenges, but you're empowered to work through them and get to the other side. So I think that's how we look at that. But I do think that balancing that transparency is really important, because like you said, you know, I think you were saying, Jeff, it's, you know, things change. You're you're working on a problem, you say, oh, you know, here's the solution we've decided on. And the day later, you find out something that makes that not right. And you don't want to be whipsawing people all over the place. But at the same time, there has to be a level of understanding, at least that, you know, the most important level of what's going on.
With that, I think a question that I have too would be, how do you empower people to make decisions that are purpose driven? So I know one side of this, of course, is what you all have already shared, which is the core values. That's always, you know, a running thing. But what are other tactics that people can use in evergreen companies that make sense as far as keeping purpose in mind, but also perspective on whatever their job role is?
Look, we believe in skip level meetings, right? That I'm not just talking to my direct reports. I'm going down one and two levels and rolling up my sleeves and helping to do things, right? So that I'm accessible. I think that's a big part of how we want to do it. I know for me personally, when I bring in a new leader, I like to, basically I have to stay involved because I need them to learn, gaggle the company, gaggle the culture, learn our employees, learn our products. And that takes time. So I said to try to stay very involved with them, walk through a lot of decisions with them, and until I get to the point where I realize like I'm just in the way, right? And then I need to step out. And it's, as a founder owner, it's very hard for me to step out. We've been using a framework where we talk about four types of decisions, right? There's a decision that's my decision as CEO. There's a decision that is my decision with input from my direct report. Then there's decisions that are my direct reports with input from me. And there's decisions that are just theirs, they don't even tell me about. And understanding those four types of decisions is one of the tools that we use.
And I think, you know, the example, right? Like people see what leaders do, and that dictates more than what leaders say. You know, not too long ago, we had an error that was quite profitable for us and extremely detrimental to the customer. Telling the customer could have ended the relationship, right? Also, you know, do you fire the person who made the mistake, right? How do you handle this? Well, we handled it by leaders going and visiting the customer, explaining the problem, showing all the details, and giving them a check, right? So what does everybody involved see that? When the person who made the mistake, it was like, well, how did that happen? Let's take a look at your process. What was going on? Do we have to change something? And yes, in fact, there was something we could do to avoid that. So when you step back as an employee, as a member of a team, and you see how something like that was handled, you go, okay, you know, I know how things are done here. I think that is probably the best way to reinforce your culture is by living it out and being true to it, even in difficult times.
Yeah, I always like to ask, David, what's my role in the problem, right? What did I do to set up this situation where, you know, employee or process failed, right? Mm-hmm. I need to look first at myself. What can I change?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it usually does start there, doesn't it? Yes. Probably something that we did that got that going. You know, I had a great opportunity yesterday to walk our shop floor with the warehouse managers. He was giving a tour. We implement lean principles, lean manufacturing, and we had someone who wanted to visit and learn about what we did. And one of the things that really struck me is there's a lot of observation involved and a lot of data management and tracking, but none of it is focused on what did you do wrong. So for example, let's say that our goal is to have 20 pieces an hour out of a certain piece of equipment and the operator is at 15. Do you just say, well, that operator is falling short? No, they go in, they take a look at it. And sure enough, the operator was having to take an extra step because there was a problem in the quality of the equipment that was causing them to be short every hour. So, you know, these are, if we start with trust in people and they know they're trusted, you give them the tools to do the best job they can. It really just depends on how you approach a problem, like you were saying. It's like, what's the root of this? You know, it's not necessarily because someone did something wrong, right? Or it's like you can't let the pressure of the situation overwhelm you to the point where you're blaming. And it's like, no, what are we collectively doing to fix this problem? And I'd say 9 times out of 10, it is something like that. It's not an individual messing up. It's something wrong with the process, the system, something that went on before them. And, you know, I think that's another one of those things, Dominique, that you just build into your culture. And as long as you keep reinforcing it, it feels very natural. But, you know, when you add pressure, you know, of course, there's a lot of pressure being an independent company, a lot of pressure being employee owned, you know, particularly around, you know, funding and access to different types of information and things like that. There are a lot of advantages to being equity backed or being venture funded. But there's also a lot of pressure that comes with that that is not necessarily related to the growth and success of the business for the people in it and your customers. And that added pressure can do things to people that can make them not be themselves, not be the best selves. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we like being an evergreen type company, is because, you know, we allow room for people to be their best selves and we're in control of our own destiny. And we can make decisions that aren't always in the best interest of, you know, some shareholder. Because in our company, well, it's the employees. It's in their best interest. We are the shareholders.
I love that. And I think that's a great way to explain it, because I think the next generation of, you know, people coming into the workforce, having ownership over decisions and that kind of stuff is so like empowering for them and almost like necessary. And that makes me think about something, which is the future of all of this. So we kind of talked about like how our companies run, but my question is, you know, if you could kind of look into a crystal ball, what do you envision as like the role of purpose-driven businesses and like the economy and this next generation of kids coming into the work? I say kids because I'm used to it. But kids coming into the workforce. Of course, my sister's like 20, so I'm like kids. But
well, you know, the heart of the American economy is small businesses, right? So not everybody graduates, you know, from a top engineering school and goes to work at Apple, Google, whatever. You know, that's what's exciting. That's what's out there. That's what we all learn about. But you know, you walk up and down the corridor where we're at in Tualatin, and there's one small business after another. And, you know, these are mostly independent businesses. So I'm not really sure how to answer that question other than to say that our future at Lightspeed resides in being a company that goes on infinitely. And if you're a young person and you're looking for a future, what kind of future do you want? Do you want a future where you hit something hard for 3 years and move on to something else? That can work for you. There are lots of opportunities that way, but there are also a lot of opportunities where companies will bring you in, teach you their business, teach you their market, invest in you for the long term. And what does that mean? It's like, well, when you're a 10-year employee for the same company out in the field as a salesperson, you know everybody and they know you and they know your company. And that is a tremendous advantage, both for you personally and your success as a salesperson, and, you know, also in your success for your growth for future positions. So I think there is some advantage to that if you have the patience.
There's a mental health sort of personality framework that's called everybody has their unanswerable question. What are they trying to live up to? And I had someone identify this that they said, Jeff, you know, your unanswerable question is, are you doing the right thing? And they're exactly right. This is what's always driving me. Am I doing the right thing? Well, you know, this might come as a surprise to you, but I'm going to be dead soon, right? But soon might be 50 years, but I'm going to be dead soon, right? So while I'm here, am I doing the right thing? And for me, that means I want to make a difference in the world, make other people happy, And I want to do right by my employees and help them be the best versions of themselves and build a company where I can pay them very well and treat them well, and they can do meaningful work. Because I think at the end of the day, having meaningful work, having purpose is what gives life meaning, right? I mean, you might have religious scope as well, but I think it's all tied in together. Having meaning and purpose is what life is about. I'm trying to live my life that way and enable others to live that way as well.
I love that. And you do that.
Not always. You can ask my family.
Nobody's 100%.
So my last question is, I think having these conversations is so important. And one of the things I love the most are stories. So in your 10 years, so I know both of you have decades on decades of experience, like in your tenure, can you talk about one pivotal moment, or it could be a group of moments, where you realize that you are on the right path with following purpose?
David, I need to think about this for a minute.
Okay, I'll give you one. It's a small one, but it had a huge impact on me. When I first came to work here, I was hired as the VP of product marketing, and I went to a trade show in New York. And, you know, one of our directors, sales directors at the time, was a salesperson in New York, Mary Bragg. And she gave a presentation, and I thought, wow, that's such a good presentation. We have this nice audience here of teachers. We should do a drawing for one of our solutions. And this teacher won it, and she came up to me and she said, I am so excited to have won this. I've wanted one, and the school wasn't able to buy one for me. And I was afraid I was going to have to quit teaching because I was getting nodules on my vocal cords and I couldn't talk. And now I'll be able to continue to teach. And she started crying and she gave me a hug. And that was the first time I'd ever had a customer hug me. Prior to this company, all I did was work with engineers, and they're not necessarily known for hugging for a nice technical solution. Not that I would even expect it, but this really blew me away that this product could have such an impact on this teacher, and she could teach and touch the lives of students for many years to come with this one small solution. And I would say that right then and there, I was like, I'm in.
Thank you, Dave. That is really meaningful. I mean, you allowed her to live her best life, right? You allowed her to basically fulfill her purpose. That is really great. I'll tell a customer story as well. And the story I'm going to tell is a very typical story. We got an email from a middle school principal about a year ago. And this principal, you know, said, thank you, y'all. You really saved a life today. Now, we get those types of messages frequently. So we did some digging in, and we found that we had sent this principal, who's one of our emergency contacts, an email about a student. And we talked to this principal. This principal told us the story. So it was the middle of the day. One of the students was not present, and it was around lunchtime. They were emailing with their teacher, and the student, through a series of emails, finally said, yeah, I'm not going to be coming into school tomorrow because I'm not going to have my homework done because I'm going to kill myself, and I mean it this time. And what my company does, we sit behind those tools looking for incidents of kids that are basically in distress or in crisis. And we have a human safety team that reviews these things 24 hours a day. We end up calling 5 minutes after that email, our safety person called the principal. The principal tracked down the family because they weren't even living at home at the time, reached the mother, and the mother said, I don't know where he's home, but I don't know where he's at. And so she goes upstairs, sees her son in the bathtub, and just freaks out. And she says, take the wheel, Jesus, hands the phone with the principal to her son. And she has to go downstairs to take care of the other kids. The boy basically admits to the principal he's taken 32 Benadryls and he's waiting to pass out and drown in the bathtub. She's able to get him out of the bathtub. The paramedics finally show up. He's in the hospital for several days, but his life is saved. He goes on to graduates from his class as a valedictorian. And this kid's life is saved because of what we and the principal did to intervene on behalf of the student. We hear that story over 1,000 times every school year, but I remember listening to this principal, recording the principal telling the story. I'm crying, right? It was just that powerful. And when we do those stories, it just reminds me every time we're doing something that matters.
That is so powerful. And that's so like wonderful. Of course, I'm so glad that in this ed tech space that these tools exist where, you know, the focal point is really the student and making sure they have well-being, whether it's through, you know, this mental health type tool or with us with, you know, audio. So I love that. I don't have any more questions that are formal, but I always talk about this. I actually precurse it this way on each podcast. This is like one of my favorite parts because it kind of reminds me of doing the like lightning rounds of stuff. And so I have two fun questions to ask before we end the podcast. So the first one, I think is a great question because we are in the ed tech space. And again, children are the focal point. So the question is, if you could remove one barrier for children at school, what would it be? And it can be anything.
I know for me, I think kids' mental health, how they see themselves in the world, how they respond to the world, that's the biggest barrier to kids learning and to adults being, all of us being happy. That emotional intelligence that becomes from self-awareness and having a sense of efficacy and self-esteem, right? I wish we taught that. I love history. I don't think we should teach history. Since most people don't know when the War of 1812 was, why are we bothering? Instead, let's teach people how to see the world and build up their self-esteem.
That's a good one. Okay, David.
I would like to get rid of chairs and clocks. I think, open up space for learning and eliminate time. And this is like a magic wand question, right? I know it's not, I don't know what the feasibility is, but I think time is an enemy of learning. And, you know, when you put kids on the clock, if you don't hit it, then you're like, oh, I'm dumb. I don't know how to do it. Or, you know, I have to solve this problem. And then you start getting in the habit of, well, if I can't solve a problem in 20 minutes, then I can't do it. Hmm. And I feel like there's something with time barrier and space barrier that we could improve upon to help learning.
As an avid procrastinator, I agree. So wonderful.
Okay.
So my last question is, what is your favorite sound in the whole world?
All right. So for me, it's laughter and people having a good time. That's my favorite sound.
That is definitely your favorite sound. I can absolutely see that. And it's funny. I go to the whole other end of the extreme. It's the sound of dawn, you know, outside, like on a lake or something, when you just crawl out of your tent. And just that, it's not just one sound, but it's silence in a different way.
That's a unique answer, silence in a different way. I love this question because every time, no matter what, we always get a couple of different answers. So David, you are one of the first people to say some version of this silence, I think, besides waves. So most people go towards the loud side of things. So I love this question, it's so unique. With that, I want to say thank you to both of you for participating today and joining us. I think this was so insightful, and I'm so excited to be working for a purpose-driven company and to be in a space with purpose-driven companies. I always talk about this on almost every episode, but my mom is a teacher, and so I think anything that people are doing to improve the world of teachers and students is like the space that I always want to be in. So thank you. That's all for today's Active Listener. Thanks for tuning in. Share your comments on this episode on our Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn social media pages. You can visit our website at lightspeed-tech.com to learn more about our mission to ensure every student hears every word. And subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Until next time, let your listening be as active as your learning.